Ladies and gentlemen, thank you for standing by. Welcome to the National All Employment Network Payments Call. During the presentation, all participants will be in a listen-only mode. Afterwards, we will conduct a question-and-answer session. At that time, if you have a question, please press star one on your telephone keypad. If you need to reach an operator at any time, please press star zero. As a reminder, this conference is being recorded Tuesday, April 28, 2015. I would now like to turn the conference over to Ms. Janet Cousins. Please go ahead, ma'am.
Good afternoon and welcome to the Ticket to Work Program monthly EN payments call. Thank you for joining us today. This is Janet Cousin. I'm the supervisor of the Payments Help Desk Team and Document Support Services Groups. Joining me is Deborah Tennessee, manager of the Ticket Operations Department for the program, and Kathy Dyson, consultant and training coordinator with Ticket Operations. We also have Katie Strivinger, member of the Social Security Administration Office of Research, Demonstration, and Employment Support with us. We will be using a presentation for today's call, and that presentation has been posted on the yourtickettowork.com website on the events page. You can look under today's date and see that and follow along, or we are sharing it via the web. This will be an interactive session, and you will be invited to ask questions at the end of the presentation. Please do not provide any details regarding your personal cases when you're asking questions due to our confidentiality requirements. You can also ask questions in the chat room, and if we're not able to address any or all of your questions during the call or the chat room, we will certainly follow up with you and make sure that we get an answer for you at a later time. So without further delay, let's get started with our presentation. So today's agenda, again, our first topic today is to focus on reviewing common payment denials. We want to identify the most frequent reasons why payment requests are denied, provide some recommendations on how to avoid denials altogether, and then just talk through some of those details. The second item that we'll be discussing today is when to use these two forms. What is the employer-prepared earnings statement? What's the supplemental earnings statement? And when should you use one versus the other? And then lastly, we're going to do some follow-up Q&A for our new ticket portal presentation that was given last month. So we're going to review a couple of payments questions that were asked during that session and talk through the answers for those. Just so you're aware, the Q&A document from last month's call has been posted online under the events page, and you can find it there and review all of the questions and the answers that have been provided for you. And once we finish that, we'll open up the lines and we'll take your questions. All right, so let's take a look at common payment denials. Here we see the five top reasons why payment requests were denied in 2014. We'll review what steps can be taken to avoid these situations. If the EN request outcomes for a beneficiary that is in current pay status, which means they're receiving federal cash benefits, the payment request will be denied. As you can see from the red section of the pie chart here, it represents 44% of all payment denials for 2014. That's our biggest chunk there. Moving on to the next page, the second most common reason for denials is associated with eligibility due to the look-back earnings. So Social Security Administration takes into consideration the earnings a ticket holder receives prior to ticket assignment. As it states in the RFQ, Phase 1 milestone payments may not be available to an EN if the beneficiary achieved that milestone within the most recent 18-month period prior to the ticket assignment. A common practice to recognize a prior earnings denial is to use the 18-month look-back tool. This tool can be downloaded from the Ticket to Work website. You can go to the Information Center tab and then click on the Forms section to find the tool. Phase 1 milestone payments may not be available to an EN if the beneficiary achieved that milestone within the most recent 18-month period prior to the first ticket assignment. Now, let's break down those milestones for a quick review. So the Phase 1 Milestone 1 requires earnings at or above the trial work level for 1 month. Phase 1 Milestone 2 requires earnings at or above the trial work level for 3 months within a 6-month period. Phase 1 Milestone 3 requires earnings at or above the trial work level for 6 months within a 12-month period. And then Phase 1 Milestone 4 requires earnings at or above trial work level for 9 months within an 18-month period. That's a lot to remember and understand and utilize each and every time you're submitting requests. So the look-back tool has become a very good resource for ENs in calculating eligibility for payments. Our next and third most common denial reason is related to a prior VR assignment. What does that mean? So no Phase 1 milestone payments will be available to an EN if the beneficiary previously was served by a state vocational rehabilitation agency and was rehabilitated. For example, the beneficiary was working at the time the SVRA successfully closed the case. All right, so how can you anticipate this situation and avoid it? Well, during intake, ENs should ask beneficiaries about any prior history of receiving VR services and whether they were working at the time of their VR case closure. ENs can also check the secure provider portal by selecting beneficiary ticket history from the main menu under the assignments tab. This includes information on prior VR services and successful closed VR cases. So even if a beneficiary has a history of prior VR services and a successful case closure, the ticket still has significant value. Total value remaining in 2015, for example, after Phase 1 milestones for SSI is over $18,000. And for SSDI beneficiaries, it's over $19,400. So keep two things in mind when trying to determine whether Phase 1 milestones are unavailable based on a beneficiary's prior VR history. First, the definition of successful closure simply means the beneficiary was working when his or her VR case was closed. There's no requirement that the beneficiary was working a certain number of hours a month, per week, or had earnings at a set level, for example, trial work level or substantial gainful activity. And second, the prior VR services Phase 1 milestone exclusion applies to all beneficiaries with a successful VR case closure after January 2002. Many beneficiaries exiting VR services in employment have earnings at or above the substantial gainful activity, or SGA, level. So for these beneficiaries, the EN can begin billing for phase two milestone payments the month following the month the EN secured the ticket assignment. Beneficiaries exiting the VR system with earnings below SGA may or may not be good candidates for the ticket program. So again, during intake, these beneficiaries should be screened to determine if they are interested in working above SGA with the goal of eventually earning enough to eliminate the need for disability benefits. All right, so moving on, the fourth most common payment denial is when earnings amounts do not meet the criteria for payment. So in 2014, 9% of all denials were in this category. The best way to avoid this type of denial is to properly calculate the beneficiary's earnings for each pay period. There's a great tool available to all ENs called the Monthly Earnings Estimator. Now, this tool can be used to help determine when a beneficiary's earnings might qualify for payment under the ticket program. It's also available on our website at yourtickettowork.com under the Information Center tab in the Resource Documents section. The next slide will help demonstrate how to manually calculate payments for both SSI and SSDI beneficiaries if you choose not to use this tool. Okay, so the Social Security Administration considers earnings differently depending on which entitlement the beneficiary is receiving, whether it's SSDI, SSI, or their concurrent. The Operations Support Manager follows a policy when calculating beneficiary earnings submitted by ENs along with the payment request. So if a beneficiary receives Supplemental Security Income, or SSI, via Title 16, the Operations Support Manager will calculate earnings based on the pay date. Even if a pay stub shows that the pay period overlapped into the following month, Social Security considers the entire gross earnings as earnings for the month in which the check was received. Now, if a beneficiary receives Social Security Disability Insurance, or SSDI, via Title II, then Operations Support Manager calculates earnings by what is earned during the month. So, for example, from the first day of the month to the last day of the month, regardless of when the beneficiary is actually paid. If the evidence of earnings for the claim month requested overlaps into the following month, those earnings amounts will be prorated for each month based on the extent of the overlap. And lastly, if a beneficiary receives both SSI and SSDI and they're considered concurrent, then Operations Support Manager calculates earnings based on both pay date and pay period. Operations Support Manager will then use whichever earnings that enables the employment network to meet earnings criteria for a specific payment type. All right, so the last reason for a payment denial is when a duplicate request is submitted. And there's usually two reasons why this may occur and can result in extra work for the EN that really can be avoided. Let's look at those two scenarios a little more closely. So the first reason a payment may be denied as a duplicate request is when an EN submits multiple payment requests for the same claim. A helpful way to avoid this is to refer to the EN payment status report on the Secure Provider Portal. This report will display all of the payment requests you've submitted within the last 363 days. This information can be filtered in various ways and sorted in order to focus in on the particular information that you're interested in reviewing by SSN, by date range, et cetera. And you can look for a specific, again, date range or unique SSN. And this will allow you to identify specific payment requests you've made so you're not submitting any kind of duplication of effort. Secondly, when ENs submit payment requests for beneficiaries that have already been registered on the Universal AutoPay program, a denial will occur if we've already made that payment for that AutoPay cycle. Remember, once registered and the AutoPay cycle begins, you do not have to submit individual payment requests going forward. All right, so here's some general information about how to avoid these payment denials. So first, we want to request pay stubs and employer earnings statements from your beneficiaries. You can request previous pay stubs or employer earnings statements as either part of the intake process or once the ticket is assigned to you. And this will give an EN an idea of which, if any, milestones they can submit. Secondly, you can call the Integrated Voice Response System, or the IVR. That number, just as a reminder, is 866-949-3687. And there's some simple prompts you can follow along there after choosing one. You'll be able to access previous assignability. And remember, you may select beneficiary ticket history from the main menu under assignments to see information on prior VR services and successful closed VR cases via the ticket portal. And lastly, check the secure provider portal. If you're a registered user of this secure provider portal, the current portal, you can log in and check for VR closure status if the ticket was previously assigned to a VR. Well, that sums up our discussion associated with common payment denials. Let's take a look at these two different forms: the supplemental earnings statement form and the employer prepared earnings statement, which was mentioned in the previous discussion regarding denials. Now, both of these forms ask for similar information, but are used for two different purposes. Do you really know when to use one versus the other? Oftentimes, we will receive one form when we really need to have the other form to support your payment request. So let's take a closer look at each document. All right, so looking at the supplemental earnings statements, the primary reasons you may want to use this form is, let's say, the pay stubs provided by the beneficiary are missing required information, or they're just not legible. And as a reminder, all evidentiary evidence must include the pay period beginning and end date, the pay date, and the total gross earnings. The form is shown here on the slide, and this form can be accessed and completed online via the Secure Provider Portal. It's also available in the form section of the Ticket to Work website if you want to fill it in and print it off or download it to submit electronically. Now, you must submit the supplemental earnings statement with the pay stubs. This cannot be submitted by itself to meet the evidentiary evidence requirement. And when do you use the employer prepared earnings form? If you are not able to obtain any earnings documents from the beneficiary and earnings information is not available via the work number, then you may want to use this form. Maybe you've received those earnings documents that are not legible, because they've been faxed multiple times or copied repeatedly, and then the beneficiary no longer has the original copy. So if you have the employer contact information, you can ask them to complete and submit this signed form as a source of primary evidence. It provides confirmation from the employer that all withholdings were made, for example, FICA, Medicare, withholdings taxes, etc. So these withholdings also confirm the beneficiary is not a self-employed individual and the employer is deducting all required withholdings at time of payment. All right, so here we are. We have an example of the form and what it looks like. Like the SES form, the employer-prepared earnings statement does require all of the employee information at the top and payment details, including the beginning and ending pay period dates, pay date, hours worked, withholding amount, and gross earnings. However, this form must be completed by the employer and must include the employer representative's name, the employer name and address, and signature of the employer's representative. The employer must also check the box shown at the bottom that says, by checking this box and signing below, the employer attests that all withholdings required by law have been made from this employee's earnings. Now, this form does serve as confirmation of payment by the employer and can be submitted by itself without pay stubs or other earnings documentation. All right, so let's take a few minutes to just recap all of the information that's been shared thus far. All right, so we talked first about common reasons for payment denials. And these are the most frequent ones. Benefits are not suspended or terminated due to work, not eligible due to look-back earnings, VR services, phase one is not available based on the VR closure, earnings amounts do not meet the criteria for payment, there's duplicate requests that are submitted, so we're denying that duplicate. And again, we compared the two forms that look a lot alike but are used for different purposes. Both of these forms may be used if the pay stubs are missing information or are illegible is the word. So, again, the stubs may include pay date and beginning, ending pay period, maybe missing, let's say, the beginning date of the pay period. May only have the pay date and the ending date of the pay period. But one of those components are missing. Now, the SES can be submitted with the pay stubs to supplement the information that's available on those stubs, while the employer-prepared earnings statement must be signed by an employer, must include all withholdings details, and it can be submitted by itself as your primary evidentiary evidence. Both forms, again, are available on our website online under the form section of the Information Center tab. All right, so that was a lot of information. I kind of trucked on through there to make sure we had enough time for questions. So let's take a few minutes, Shalon, if we can open up the lines and take a couple of questions.
As a reminder, if you have an audio question, please press star 1 on your telephone keypad. Once again, that's star 1. A question from Peter.
Hi, Peter.
Hi. How you doing?
Great.
I've got a beneficiary who is self-employed. At least she gets a 1099 form from her employer. The employer basically writes a check that has the company's name on it, but it looks very much like a personal check and just basically pays her the same amount of money over SGA for each month. How would you suggest that I submit that payment?
Peter, since since no withholdings are taken from that, that's considered an SEI earnings beneficiary. Normally for SEI claims, the beneficiary has to fill out a form that shows the gross earnings, expenses, and the net amount, whereas the net amount has to be at trial work level or SGA level or above those levels to satisfy any of our payment requirements. Since the beneficiary is not actually working as a self-employment individual, as a salaried, but as a contractor, at that point, we could only process a payment request from you once that individual has filed their income taxes and Social Security receives a record of their annual earnings, because there's no other way for Social Security to receive that information.
Yeah, so she has submitted her tax return for, 2014 and is, currently working.
Okay.
So that's been done. Could we, if she completed that form and showed earnings above SGA, could we submit with that form and the pay stubs?
You could submit the form, really, is what we're interested in, because we're going to look at the earnings on Social Security's record. And the reason why we have to do this, because a number of times we receive that SEI form and there are very little expenses deducted and the net amount is equal to either above or equal to trial work level or equal to SGA or above. But once the beneficiary files their income taxes, their expenses increase so that their net amount becomes much lower, so they have to pay less taxes. So we use the information based on what the beneficiary has filed on their income tax. So since he or she has already done that, that form can be sent in. They can estimate whatever expenses they had for a particular month. And if the net amount is SGA or trial work level, whatever type of payment request you're submitting, we will then compare that information to what's posted to Social Security records for what the IRS has submitted to SSA.
And one more question, if I may ask. Now, is Social Security going to average her earnings over the course of a year, or is that going to, or is there a way for them to figure out how much she earned per month?
Normally, their method of determining monthly earnings for SEI beneficiary is income averaging over the 12-month period. Yes.
Yeah. So, I mean, she really didn't work the full year. So there wouldn't be a way to document this in real time?
Not, the only way that would be is if the beneficiary had gone into the Social Security office and reported monthly earnings. Sometimes SEI beneficiaries, we do see monthly earnings posted to a beneficiary's earnings record after they've gone to their Social Security office and, whatever documentation they had to take in to show whatever their net earnings were, they had to show something. But sometimes we actually see monthly amounts posted. But if the beneficiary hasn't done that, the only way we have of knowing or trying to figure out monthly income is to use the averaging method.
Yeah, she actually has been reporting. So how do I get the SEI form?
The SEI form is also posted on the Ticket to Work website.
This is Janet. You can go to the website and click on the Information Center tab on the top, and then on the left-hand side, click on Forms.
Okay, great.
And then when you scroll down, you'll see the payment section, and all of the payments forms are right there together.
Okay.
Peter, I apologize. This was Deborah Tennessee who responded to your question.
Okay. Thank you. I appreciate it. That's very good information.
Thanks for the questions, Peter. Any other questions, Shalom?
Yes, ma'am. Your next question comes from Sabrina.
Hi, Sabrina.
Oh, hi. I thought you said Raina. Sorry. it kind of sounds like Sabrina, but I don't think that's what you said. How's everyone today?
Oh, just
fabulous. Thank you.
Good.
Okay?
I'm doing well. Thank you. I have actually two questions. My first question is this. In terms of outcome payment, is there a way, if you have a consumer – that is receiving outcome payments, that the payments can come a little bit quicker outside of getting in the, what's it called, the auto pay? Yeah, the universal auto pay. Provided everything is the same, same employer, same, nothing has changed in terms of the personal information on the paycheck. So I'm just wondering, why does it take anywhere from 15 days upward for us to receive a payment?
Okay.
Or as far as the turnaround is concerned.
Okay. Let me answer. You have two questions, so let me answer that first before I forget your first question.
Okay. Sorry about that. I jumbled a lot of stuff in there.
Okay. This is Deborah Tennessee again speaking, and let me tell you about the rules for Universal Auto Pay. We have two files for Universal Auto Pay. The first file are for beneficiaries where we will assess a payment for the current attainment month or the current month where an EN would be eligible. And to give you an example what I mean by that, we're in the month of April, and the latest month or the current month that we can make a payment for is March. Okay? If they're earning for April, we can't make those today. So the current month we're making a payment is in March. However, those beneficiaries that are listed on a UAP file, we only process those current month, current attainment month payments if the EN has received 12 outcomes or more for that particular beneficiary. Now, if the EN has received less than 12 outcome payments for a particular beneficiary, we do not process an outcome payment for the current attainment month. We process an outcome payment prior, 4 months prior to the current attainment month. And the reason for that is this. Social Security needs to have time. A number of times beneficiaries will go from suspense back into current pay, and we don't know about it. And by the time we do know about it, we may have already issued some outcome payments. Outcome payments under Universal Auto Pay process are not like other payment processes. And you mentioned earnings and, you know, why does it take so long? Universal Auto Pay payments are processed based on consistent earnings, not on earnings we might see for the a particular month. To give you an example, for the month of March, when we received our first Universal Auto Pay file, maybe the first week of the month or near the second week of the month, there are no earnings posted on Social Security records for March then. So nobody would get a payment then. However, if we have records for quarterly earnings, annual earnings, we see that a beneficiary has been working consistently above SGA level. They have not received any unemployment income, and we don't see any type of termination on that record. Then Social Security believes that, and after 12 outcomes consistently, there's been SGA level for at least 12 months. SGA believes that that beneficiary is consistent, and it sounds like they have a solid job. So we make an assessment to pay those beneficiaries for the current attainment month. Those beneficiaries where they're less than 12 in outcome payments, there's a possibility that they could go back on current pay, and it takes about 3 months for Social Security field offices to update records and to get change that beneficiary status. So it's the fourth month. And unless, and let me make this clear, we talked about these denials where you're getting your duplicate payment. If you don't get a payment and you know that you have, let's say, pay stubs for one of those beneficiaries who we're making a payment for you in the fourth month, if you have pay stubs for the last 3 months, send those in. The reason why we did not do that before is because ENs did come to Social Security and complain a number of times that they could not get evidence of earnings from beneficiaries who had gone into suspense, and, you know, it was just hard to get in touch with them. So a number of times they couldn't get any type of evidence or any type of earnings from these beneficiaries. However, if you can get primary evidence or pay stubs from beneficiaries who are on that file with less than 12 outcome claims paid under their Social Security number, you can submit that primary evidence, and if all other criteria is met, we can make those payments.
Okay, great. I have a situation that I just resent a payment in because the consumer missed the SGA threshold by $1.37. So you could imagine how disheartening that was, and it was, you know, it was certainly my fault because I just wasn't paying attention when I submitted the payment to see that he was missing it by that little amount. But has it ever been that Social Security has made a payment or a payout on a claim that was like less than $5 or less than $2 or $3?
No, ma'am.
No. So
no.
It has
to
be.
If we did it, it was a mistake. But, no, we have to follow those rules for the letter.
Okay. Next question. I have a consumer that I'm taking on, and he has a successful VR closure.
Okay.
After questioning him quite thoroughly, he explained to me that the only thing that VR did for him was transportation assistance while he was in school, which was about $50 to $60 a month. My question is, if he was not employed and he did not make trial work level or SGA or any of those things, why would his phase one milestone payments be off the table for the employment network that's taking him on?
Well, I can tell you what the rules are. The rules are there was a successful closure because he was working at the time the case closed. Now, he might have been going to school, but was he working too?
No, he was not working. He was in school full time.
I guess that's something I would have to ask someone from LVR. That's what recourse is there for that particular beneficiary, because the VR's rules are to close the case as a successful closure if the beneficiary is working when the case is closed.
Well, yeah, I questioned him. I said, are you sure you won't? No, I was in school full time.
Okay.
I just got certified and I just got licensed, and no, I was not working.
Okay.
The transportation assistance was for me to go to school. So I found that quite puzzling as to why they would close the case successful just based on transportation assistance.
No, that's not according to the rules. That shouldn't have happened.
Okay.
What's the name of your EN?
Self-sufficiency through employment out of Birmingham, Alabama, and New Orleans, Louisiana. Well, actually, we're nationwide, but those are our two main offices.
Do you know who your account manager is?
David Jones.
Okay. Okay.
The best account manager there is.
Okay. We're going to refer that issue to David Jones for him to get back to you on that.
Okay. All right. Excellent. Well, thank you all so very, very much, and you all have a wonderful day.
Thank you, Sabrina. Some great questions. Appreciate your participation today.
Your next question comes from Nicole.
Hi, Nicole.
Hi. Can you hear me?
Yes, we can hear you.
Okay.
You have a question?
Okay. Yes, I do. I'm sorry. So I have a question on the difference between the phase two and the outcome payments when somebody switches from phase two milestones to outcome. I have a beneficiary who was in phase two, and then they denied my payment saying that he was ready for outcome. He was making over SGA, but he was still receiving federal cash benefits because of, like, the subsidies and different things that he could claim. So I don't understand how or why they would move him from phase two to outcome payment and then deny my payments when he's still receiving federal cash benefits. So why do they do that?
Do you know if you received the maximum phase two payment for that beneficiary? Is it SSI or SSDI beneficiary?
I'm sorry?
Do you know if you received the maximum number of phase two milestones for that beneficiary?
We only received seven.
Seven? Okay, then send that request to our EM Payments Help Desk, and they can check that for you to see what's going on with that. And the denial reason you received is that, did it say that the beneficiary was,
The first denial said he was ready for outcome payments, and then when I submitted it for an outcome payment, it was because he was receiving federal cash benefits.
Okay. Send that inquiry to our EM Payments Desk, and we'll analyze that particular denial and see what's going on with that.
Okay. All right. Thank you.
Mm-hmm.
Great. Thank you. Shalon, if there's any additional questions, what I'd like to do is just...
Can you call?
Yes. If we can take one of the questions from the chat room. Kathy, did you have a question?
Yes, this is Kathy, and let me, if I may, just read a very interesting question. This is from Cynthia, and Cynthia's concern is she's an EN and that has done everything she knows to do to obtain earnings information from the beneficiary. She called, she emailed, but to no avail. During the time of intake, the ticket holder refused to sign a release that the EN can speak with the employer to obtain employer's information. The EN also noted that the ticket holder wages are not posted to the work number. And so she's asking, what else is there for her to do? Is there any other recourse? Any input or intake from someone, maybe from Social Security Administration?
That's really a pretty hard issue, in a sense that the beneficiary would not. It seems to me the beneficiary does not want the EN to know what the earnings are by not signing that form. And basically, if you cannot get, if the EN would know, let's say, the place of, oh, they can't go back to the employment agency, the only thing I can think of, there's some queries out, and I'm not sure of all the information on these queries that ENs can look at for certain information when they're serving beneficiaries. It's a BPQY. Maybe their earnings there somewhere. I'm not sure, but you basically covered everything that we could think of. It would have been either have recent contact with the beneficiary for them to tell you that they are working at a certain level and to give you their employer's name. But since you can't contact the employer, that's out. The work number doesn't have any record of it. And maybe the beneficiary isn't working on, maybe the beneficiary isn't working somewhere where withholdings are made. I'm not sure, but I just, the only thing I could think of is maybe checking a BPQY with the field office.
Thank you so very much, Deborah.
Okay, very good. What I'd like to do, Shalon, if there's other callers on the line, what I'd like to do is, we've got 15 minutes left in the call. Let's move on, and anyone who is waiting to ask a question, please send that question to the EN Payments Help Desk at yourtickettowork.com, and we'll be happy to follow up with you. But what I'd like to do is take a few minutes to do some follow-up from last month's new Ticket to Work presentation that was given. There was a lot of excitement around the new ticket portal that is currently in test mode with Pilot EN. And we had a number of questions that were asked last month related to the presentation that was given. And I want to make you all aware that, again, the Q&A document from last month's call has been posted on our website. Again, from the Information Center tab, you can click on the Event Archive link and look on the calendar under EN Payments call and see that Q&A document. So there's a couple of questions that we wanted to just talk through today. And the first question I will ask to Deborah Tennessee, and she'll provide an answer for you. So the first question we have here that was asked last month is, for Phase 1, Milestone 2, Milestone 3, and Milestone 4 payments, 3 months constitute one payment. Do we have to submit 3 payment requests for the same payment since we can only type in 1 month at a time? And let me clarify that question again as a refresher from the presentation. You may remember that the new ticket portal has a payment request screen that requires ENs to enter the SSN number of the beneficiary and 1 claim month for each payment request. That's a little different from the current experience on the secure provider portal where you can enter multiple and with the form that you can submit for multiple. So in the new ticket portal, you'll be submitting an SSN with 1 claim month for each payment request. And the Phase 1 milestones do require verification of earnings for 3 consecutive months. So So they're asking which month should they use when they submit the payment request in those cases. So, Deborah, what's the correct answer here?
Okay. Before I go into that answer, I'm going to try to clarify that question a little bit more for those listeners on today's call. And I believe what the EN was asking in the situation when they mentioned 3 months constitute one payment. It's not really 3 months that constitute one payment. I think what they mean is when they go from a phase one milestone two to a phase one milestone three, that at a phase one milestone two, you need 3 months of earnings. To get a milestone three, you need 6 months, so that would be 3 more months if previous 3 months have been there. And the same situation for milestone four. If you've received a phase one milestone three, you have 6 months of earnings. So to get a phase one milestone four, you would only need 3 more months to make up that 9 month period. So the answer to that is you only need to submit one payment request for each payment or claim. For phase one milestones, you will use the attainment or qualifying month as the month of the payment request. For example, a payment request for phase one milestone two will use the 3rd month the beneficiary had earnings at trial work level, which is the attainment month or the payment month. This is consistent with the payment month you see in your current payment status report available on the secure provider portal. To give you an example, you are submitting a payment request for phase one milestone two. If the phase one milestone one was paid in October, and for the phase one milestone two, their earnings above trial work level for November and December as well as October. Well, since the attainment month for phase one milestone two would be December, you would submit your claim for phase one milestone two for the month of December. Now, if you have earnings, evidence of earnings or pay stubs, you would enter those earnings for November and December because we would need that information. But you only are supposed to submit a payment request or a claim for the qualifying month you want to get paid.
Great. Thanks, Deborah. That is a little different from the current portal experience, but again, it's a great scenario and a great question for the new portal process. All right, so our next question, will the payments data include payment history from before the transfer to the new ticket portal?
The answer to that is yes. All payment history will be available by way of the new ticket portal. There are 2 screens that provide payment status similar to the current EN payment status report that's available on the secure provider portal. All pending payments in progress at the time of your transition will be visible on the pending payments for me screen. Now, when I say pending payments, that could be a claim that was received, or there could be a claim that's possibly in a diary situation where we're waiting for some additional information from you. We may need you to update your status in SAM. All closed, completed, and paid payment requests will be visible on the payments made to me screen in the new ticket portal. Remember, the new ticket portal provides real-time updates, so all new payment requests will be visible as work cases in the pending payments for me screen immediately after they are created.
Great question again, and a good answer. Again, that's one of the key features of the new ticket portal is that the information is going to be provided real time. There's no delay in processing and updating of the information on the portal site. All right, so our 3rd question, does each pay stub need to be added separately, or can we enter an entire month at once? So, again, let's just to clarify this a little bit. The new ticket portal allows ENs to enter in their earnings information through the portal screen. That's not something that you can do on the current portal, but it is something that's available to be done in the new portal. So, Deborah?
Yes, you will need to enter each pay stub separately. The system will allow you to enter earnings for 5 pay periods when you enter earnings in the ticket portal for each payment request. And that's the limitation. However, there is no limit to the number of documents you submit with the fax cover sheet. And I think some ENs have asked this question because we're seeing payment requests submitted to us where an EN will add up everything and just give us a total for the month and say, the monthly earnings are the total amount. However, they will show dates, for pay dates, let's say 4 months and four different payments, a dollar amount for those four different dates. That tells me that the EN does, the beneficiary or the EN has access to pay stubs, and these are perhaps four different pay periods. In this situation, we would need, if we don't have all the information, a SES statement, which Janet talked about earlier, along with that, those pay stubs, or you need to, if you had the pay stubs for the 4 weeks, just enter each week separately because we need to see each pay period entered.
Okay, very good. Another good question. Now, the other thing to be aware of is the project team is working on expanding the number of entries that are available in that screen. So it's currently limited to 5 pay periods, and you can enter pay stubs, you can enter work number earnings, you can enter that employer-prepared earnings statement information, but that will be expanded in one of the future releases. All right, so our last question here is, using the new portal, do we need to make a request for all payments we wish to receive?
Janet, the answer to that is EN should submit a separate payment request for each claim month and type of payment. For example, if an EN wants to request 3 outcome payments for January through March 2015, the EN must submit a separate payment request for the claim month of January, and that should say 2015, and the type of claim outcome. For the claim month February, and that should say 2015, the type of claim is the outcome. And for claim month March 2015, the type of claim outcome. The benefit of doing this in the new ticket portal is that with each submission, an individual work case is automatically created and assigned to a payment specialist for processing. And with the real-time updates, you have visibility of the work case on your pending payments for me screen immediately. While the current process by way of the secured provider portal and faxing allows you to include multiple claim months on each payment request form, the Ticket Operations Department of Operations Support Manager has to manually create each separate claim for each month before reviewing the documents for each and making a determination. The new ticket portal automates those steps so the work case is automatically created for each claim and the documents submitted for each are automatically associated to each case. This will result in faster processing and review and processing time and a reduction in payment denials for duplicates. So as soon as you enter a payment request in the new ticket portal, automatically a work case is created and that goes into a processor's queue. Once you send in your evidentiary information, your pay stub, the system automatically associates those that evidence with your work case. I mean, this is all in real time. And you don't have to worry about 2 days later if I don't see on my EN payment status report a receipt. You will see that information immediately. That information or that work case will be created immediately. Now, in today's environment, the current process, there may be 3 hands or 3 steps that need to take place before a work case even gets into a processor's queue. So this will really cut down on our processing time.
Excellent point. Excellent. Yes, we're all excited about the new ticket portal, the automation associated with it, and really looking forward to working with you and partnering with you on that transition. Okay, guys, we had a lot of good discussion here, a lot of information shared today. What I'd like to do, Shimon, is go ahead and open up the lines again to take some additional questions before we wrap up for the day.
Your next question comes from the line of Brian.
Hi, Brian.
Hi, this is Brian Harmon. I'm with Nationwide Employment Network. I sent a payment request for an evidence repairment request for phase one, milestone two, milestone three, milestone four. And my payment request was denied, saying that I didn't have, there was no record of earnings in the SSA or the Maximus system. How could that be possible if I submitted evidentiary payment requests?
Well, Brian, this is Kathy speaking. When you stated that you submitted an evidentiary payment request, that consists of different types of primary evidence. Do you recall what type of evidence?
Paycheck stubs.
They were pay stubs?
Yes.
Okay. Now, if the pay stubs had qualifying amounts, and the information on the stubs were legible, and it had all of the details that's required, then that may have very well been a mistake. What you can do is outreach to the help desk with that specific beneficiary's information, and we'll be happy to take a look at it. Mistakes happen. Most of the payments are made by specialists, and so whenever there is an error, we always go back and fix it once it's brought to our attention.
Certainly, it'd be helpful, Brian. This is Janet speaking. If you have the work case numbers that are referenced in the EM payment status report that is referring to the denials, we'll be happy to take another look at that. Pay subs certainly are primary evidence for evidentiary payment requests, and if they were included and meet the trial work level requirements, et cetera, then we can certainly take another look and make sure that we review those claims once again.
Okay. Another question or a suggestion. I know, at least in the disability adjudication cases, a WATS report, a WHAT report, is submitted for each beneficiary or each applicant's case file. I didn't know if that would be something that could be available to the ENs to help us verify earnings in the new ticket system.
That's something that we're not familiar with at all. You're saying it's a disability case file folder?
Yeah, well, you know, in the new ticket portal, we're going to be able to submit, for example, IWPs and things directly with a barcode and scan into the beneficiary file. Mm-hmm. I know when I testify in the Social Security disability cases, we're able to submit the same type of evidence. And sometimes in those same cases, the evidence of the earnings can be reviewed by the judges. I didn't know that information would be available to employment networks as well.
You're talking about information in Social Security's databases?
Yeah. I think it's provided by IRS.
Okay. No, that information is not provided to ENs. I can tell you that it's not right now. The closest we had of providing ENs with any type of earnings information is at the one time when the CUBER information was posted in the Secure Provider Report portal, and Social Security found out from the general counsel that they should not be doing that. So as far as I know, there's no earnings information coming directly from Social Security systems that would be provided to you.
Okay. Well, we'll just have to do our best to get the evidence from our beneficiaries, huh?
Okay. And if not the beneficiaries, then again, the third parties, like the work number.
Yeah.
Okay.
Very good. Thank you very much.
You're welcome.
Thank you, Brian. Great question.
Question comes from Melissa Macy.
Hi, Elisa. Hi. How is everybody?
We're just fine.
Wonderful. Thank you.
Yeah, I had done the question thing a long time ago. It was really based on that wage release information. Can I ask about that, or should we let that go for now?
You're talking about the CUBER information?
No, just basically trying to get somebody's stubs.
Sure, sure. And any question you have, we'll be happy to answer for you.
Okay, thank you. I just have a concern. I mean, everybody signs that employer wage release when they come in, when they sign the plan. But I just have a real, I don't know, I'm just really nervous about contacting an employer, especially with these people who have severe disabilities. The one in most of mine have mental health issues. And I really don't want to do that to the beneficiary. I mean, I know I have the release, and I know that I can send in the employer, what you guys just said today, that form, the employer-prepared earnings statement.
Okay.
But then I'm divulging that this person has some type of an issue. I don't know. I feel funny about it. And I just wanted to get feedback on how to proceed, because I know somebody's working. I have got two guys who are working.
Okay. You have two guys who are working. Can you get pay stubs from them?
No, that's the issue. One of them we sent to truck driving school. We spent quite a lot of money on him. I have sent letters to him. I have emailed him. I have talked to his wife. They keep saying they're going to send him, going to send him, going to send him, and they won't, flat out won't.
Okay.
And I have the I was on the chat room saying that the UI information does show that this guy is working. He's making money.
Okay.
But we're not going to get paid. And again, I guess it is my fault, because I just have a hesitation to send that to an employer. I don't want them to turn around and fire him because of his mental health disability. And I know they can't do that, but they do. They do.
Okay.
And, yeah.
There are, you can, again, go to the work number and try to get that information from there. He said you've talked to his wife and him. They've promised you the documents, but they haven't. But ask him, who is he working for?
I know who he's working for.
Okay. If you've asked him that, let me finish.
Okay.
If you know who he's working for, and he does, if he can just tell you his earnings are above a certain amount or at a certain amount, the trial work level, if it's for a phase one milestone or SGA, whatever those dollars amount for the years you're interested in, what you can do is send in a payment request called a certification payment request that says recent contact with beneficiary. You list the employer's name and address and just put a statement, beneficiary is working above trial work level.
That's the problem. What I have in the unemployment insurance thing that we have is unbelievable. He began, according to his wife, He won't talk to us. But according to her, he started working like the third week of December. She says she doesn't know what he's getting paid. So my UI information for the last quarter includes literally 8 days in December. So we're 6 months behind as well with the wage report.
Okay.
Yeah, I guess I could also just wait till you guys do the information for us in, I guess, in May for the, since we're on auto pay or e-pay. And maybe you can capture it? Does that happen?
That can happen, but, I mean, you still could go to third party, try to go to the work number.
We don't have access to it. I've pushed for it, and I'm just waiting on them to see if they're going to approve it. So I can't even access it.
Your company?
Yeah.
Hasn't approved it?
No, we don't do the work number. Mm-mm.
Well, at this point, since you don't take that option to use the employer prepared statement, that's one of those options Social Security came up with because of situations where people cannot get either information, pay stubs, or information. So, and at this point, until we go to ePay, if you're not going to use any of those other avenues out there, then ePay would be it for you, I think.
Okay. Well, we're on ePay, so I'll just wait till the earnings come in then.
Okay.
All right. Well, thank you.
Excuse me, Alicia, are you with the WIS?
I'm sorry?
Are you with the Workforce Investment Board?
I'm with Workforce Connections.
Okay. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. And I've presented it to my supervisor, and he is presenting it to the director, so I'm just waiting on to see what happens with the work number.
Yeah. And also the quarterly earnings, because if it wasn't on – anything wasn't, he started work in December, which would have been the fourth quarter of 2014.
Correct.
Yeah. It's going to be a while before the first quarter 2015 is posted. Okay.
Yep. Yeah.
Okay.
All right. Well, thank you.
You're welcome.
Thanks, Alyssa. Good question.
No further questions.
Okay. We have one question in the chat room that Kathy's going to share with us.
Mm-hmm. Okay, great. This question is just pertaining to the portal training. The actual EN missed the training, and they just would like to know when is the next training schedule.
We don't have a copy of the training schedule right now, but we do know that our training group here is working on some tools for another training session, and once they have that schedule together, that will be transmitted to the EN.
And this is Janet. I just want to clarify. Last month, we didn't actually do a training session. It wasn't a general training session for all ENs. What we did was take some time during each of the all calls to provide a presentation, really, which was an introduction to the new portal. So we shared some of the screens, some of the current functionality that's being tested. But that presentation was not shared publicly as a training package, because there are additional changes and enhancements and new features that are being planned and being tested currently. And once the final rollout to the general EN audience occurs, it will be different. So one thing for everyone to be aware of and know is that once your registration information has been validated, you've met all of the requirements to join the new ticket portal, and that all of the information requirements for registration is also available on our website under the Information Center tab. That's really what you should be focusing on now, is preparing yourself for registration and access to the new portal. And then once you're confirmed and the deployment begins, you'll have complete training with materials and reference documents for your deployment. Good question, Kathy. Anything else, Shalon, that we can check on the line? Any other calls?
There are no other questions at this time.
Okay, great. Well, thanks, everyone, for joining us today. This was a really good session, a lot of good questions and interactions. I want to just remind everyone that, again, we'll have notes from a recap from today's call. We'll document all of the questions and the answers for those questions and post those on our website within the next few days. And for next month, I want to give you a heads up. The last Tuesday of next month is the day after Memorial Day, so we will be scheduling this meeting for the week prior, which will be May 19th, and that will be from 3 to 4 p.m. Eastern Time. Again, thanks, everyone, for joining us today. We do appreciate your participation. This call is for your benefit, and we hope that it's been helpful for you. Enjoy the rest of your day. Thank you.